inspiring interviews, provocative people. Get ready. Get bold today with your Emmy-winning host, LeGron Green.
I'm LeGron Green, and this is Bold. So this is the place where shift happens. We invite you to join us at GetBoldToday.com. We are talking today to Matt Rosa, who is a fantastic, phenomenal blogger at Salon and many other places. Hi, Matt.
Hi. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I want to talk to you, Matthew, about something that's really coming up in the news today, which is, I would say, is the pop culture of whiteness. And we're seeing this right now with the Oscars and the whole issue of Selma being snubbed. And this, people are like, how could this movie that was produced by this great female African-American director, Oprah's in it, the actors gotten all this acclaim, and they walked off with two Academy Award nominations, which is, to a lot of people, very, 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 very shameful. Like, you know, no one's paying attention to the so-called black movie, or the, in this post-racial environment we all talk about, which doesn't exist in my opinion, but this whole issue of the pop culture of whiteness, the Academy is mostly white men, and the average age of the white man in the Academy is 63 years old. So
it reminds me of a parallel between a movie that was nominated, a couple that swept the nominations a couple of years ago, Steven Spielberg's biopic about Abraham Lincoln. And basically what occurred to me was, because even though Lincoln didn't win Best Picture, I mean, I don't remember the exact number, but it did very well in terms of getting nominations, of garnering nominations. And what occurred to me was, because one of the controversies surrounding Selma is its depiction of President Lyndon Johnson.
Right.
Which, though, I mean, I have not seen the movie, so I'm commenting not on the film itself, but on the commentary around the movie. A lot of the criticisms made about Lyndon Johnson's portrayal are based on the idea that he wasn't given the fair shake, whereas a lot of historians criticized Steven Spielberg's depiction of Abraham Lincoln on the opposite grounds, that he was given too much credit for ending slavery in this country. And the reason I find that intriguing is because Lincoln is a movie about a white statesman and his role in this larger issue, in this larger struggle, whereas Selma is ostensibly about an African-American leader, Martin Luther King, with the white statesman being sidelined. And the reason I think that's noteworthy is because it says something that Lincoln was able to do so much better at the Academy Awards than Selma, despite the fact that Selma, I think in this case actually because Selma focused more on the black narrative.
Right, and then, you know, there was an issue last year with Oprah. Oprah's been snubbed twice now, or, you know, if you want to look at snubbing, The Butler didn't do well at all last year. It did well financially, but it didn't do well in the whole award season. And I know people attach a lot to awards, you know, and it's like, you know, it reminds me of people looking for some outside validation. So a lot of people from black, white Twitter, wherever it is, they're really enraged about this Selma thing, and they've even started a hashtag, Oscars so white. And there's a diversity gap in the Academy Awards anyway, because 98% of the producers in it are white. 98% of the actors are white who have won, which is shocking. So in that context, and what you're talking about, Matt, with your article that says there are five reasons white pride is always racist. How is whiteness allowed to persist within our culture right now?
I think the problem isn't so much that it's allowed to persist as it is that we don't fully acknowledge its prevalence. I mean, race has been scientifically discredited. We fully understand that it's an artificial sociological construct that was also relatively recent in terms of how human beings have viewed themselves relative to others. I think the problem is we're just so used to it that we don't see it fully. And so it's easier to continue viewing reality through this erroneous paradigm than it is to recognize it and try to adjust our worldview based on new information.
I like what you're saying. It's very profound in a lot of ways, Matthew, because what I'm really sensing from that is so pervasive and so ingrained that I think it's when things like the Selma snub happens in the sense of pop culture movies happens, and we see the things like obviously Ferguson happened and the different racial events and all the controversy right now about the cops and the police and all that that's happening. It's like people are, I don't want to say waking up, but it's being put in our faces. It's like, oh, this has always been there, but it's now only now drawing a lot of attention. And I think that's great in mobilizing people.
I agree. I think that the internet has actually been a valuable tool in all of this because it provides communities that otherwise might have had more difficulty mobilizing with a forum for finding like-minded individuals and creating campaigns. I mean, you know, after the bombing of the NAACP Center, hashtag NAACP bombing trended on Twitter, you know, things like that. So it is, you know, also, you know, Black Lives Matter was another trending tweet. I mean, you can argue over how effective these trends have been in addressing the problems they're meant to confront, but at the very least, more attention is being paid to these issues because like-minded individuals can meet online.
Right, right, and raise awareness for issues as well, because like the hashtag NAACP bombing, what I found fascinating about that is that it wasn't really covered that much in the news, and I wouldn't even have even known about it until I just happened to be on Twitter and saw something and clicked on it. So I find it fascinating how the news is covered, like I said, how our pop culture is covered, and until something tragic happens that draws attention to it. I just read a recent article about this whole pop culture whiteness in the issue of white liberal thinking and how it was okay to obviously be on board with the Charlie Hebdo massacre and all that happened there, but people in white liberal Hollywood felt okay with that, but would be really resistant to coming out against some of these racial issues that are going on in our own country.
No, I fully agree, and part of the problem, I would say, is there is this obsession with saying that we live in a post-racial society, and you know, one of the I received a lot of emails for the article that we're discussing right now. Actually, I've received more personal emails for this article than probably anything I've written in about 6 months. And a common theme I noticed was I'm tired of being told that I should feel guilty for being white. And the thing is, I'm not arguing that people should feel guilty. I don't think most leftists would argue that white people should feel guilty. It's that you should be aware of the fact that everyone who is alive has certain privileges and certain disadvantages. There are very few people who are either entirely privileged or entirely disadvantaged. And what progressivism is all about is feeling compassion for those who are suffering from unfair disadvantages and trying to work to remove those. And once you realize that race doesn't really exist, and then you understand the history of how people who have benefited from the privilege of being thought of as white have received unfair advantages, you naturally come to the conclusion that the just thing to do would be to recognize racism when it is in effect and work to stop it. And denying that racism exists doesn't solve the problem. Simply not talking about it doesn't solve the problem. And just feeling guilty wouldn't solve the problem either. The solution is to say, okay, because I am considered white, I receive certain privileges that I shouldn't. And the same constitutional rights that I can take for granted as a white person, such as the right to not be harassed by law enforcement, such as the right to, you know, be able to apply for any job and know that the color of my skin isn't going to lead to prejudiced assumptions that won't lead to my hiring, things, the ability to rent a house anywhere, things like that, other people should have those rights as well, and to recognize that you shouldn't take it for granted.
Well, you shouldn't take it for granted. And I, like I said, the reason I love talking to you about this, Matt. Now, Matt, what's your background? What's your background?
I'm Jewish. I'm mostly Hungarian. I'm 75% Hungarian Jewish, and then some ancestors came from Austria and Russia instead.
Okay, so I love that you did it. That's your background, and that's your perspective for what you grew up and how you. And I'm an African American man, and we're sitting here talking about these issues. You know, and I see this pop culture whiteness. I see this pop culture whiteness theme play out. I just saw. Are you familiar with the show Black-ish?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, it's a show called Black-ish on ABC. With Anthony Anderson and Tracy Ellis Ross, who's Delana Ross's daughter, and it's about an upper scale black family wading the waters of what race means in America today. And I bring this up because they had a funny episode. It's a comedy. The other night, it was all about Martin Luther King. And the family goes on a ski trip, you know, their upscale family, and the black father is trying to teach his young black son about discrimination, and he can't find it. I mean, they get stopped by the police, and it's nice. The father keeps trying to tell the boy, I want you to be aware of what's going on in America, but it's done in a very funny way. But it made its point with me, because we're talking about this, it's how blacks, whites, how people of color view things. And I think this outrage that you're seeing about the Oscars so white, and it's people feel invalidated. You know, like, you know, how could we have this great movie and we get, and it's gotten all these awards, and, you know, it's gotten the best ratings or reviews of any movie this Oscar season, from things like Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic and all that. But people are feeling invalidated, Matthew, and I want to see, what would you say to someone, you know, because it's almost kind of a conundrum for me, because if you are looking for outside validation, just go to the movie. Just go to the movie and support it. I don't know if you can expect an academy of, you know, 63-year-old average white man to, old white man to say, this is a great movie. You probably need to get...
Well, I mean, part of the problem here is that the Oscars aren't really that legitimate an institution for determining cinematic quality. I mean, you brought up several times the demographic composition of the Oscar committee. That should say a great deal about a deeper problem with the Oscars themselves. I mean, we assume that a movie that wins Oscars is automatically a classic, but just to use a couple of examples from recent history, you know, E.T. versus Gandhi. Gandhi won for Best Picture, and most people, including myself, would argue that Gandhi is a very overwrought epic, whereas E.T. is a classic that everyone knows, you know, today. You know, the Oscars, you know, I would say in 2005, Brokeback Mountain versus Crash. I thought Crash was a good movie. I thought Brokeback Mountain was a far superior film. And I think giving the Best Picture nod to Crash was easy. In terms of Selma, I think also Crash was a movie written and directed by white people about race,
exactly. Yes.
And in terms of Selma, I think, like I said, that's why I made the comparison with Lincoln. Selma and Lincoln are both movies about important events in the history of the civil rights movement or broader African American history, centering around the biography of one person. In the case of Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. In the case of Selma, Martin Luther King. And the key difference between the two is that in Selma, the protagonist is a black man, and in Lincoln, the protagonist is a white man.
Exactly. And some would argue the opposite, because last year, 12 Years a Slave won Best Picture, and that obviously is a movie from a perspective of a black man and going through slavery, and the black producer won, and the black screenwriter won, and that was a very difficult movie for me. Not taking away from its beautiful imagery and the powerful story, it's so difficult for me to watch that movie, but it was a great movie. So some would say, well, see, the Academy voted that as Best Picture, so what are you saying? None of this really matters.
Well, what is your position on that? Because honestly,
I would say, actually, interesting enough, what I read, now this is all from what the you know, and there's no way to prove this, but they were saying that many of the people who voted for 12 Years a Slave did not see it. They voted for it out of obligation. And I read a theory also that perhaps Selma is enduring kind of a backlash because a lot of people, not granted, this is just a theory, are saying, we already gave it to the black movie last year. We don't need to do it again. You know, there's some undercurrents of racism in that.
So, yeah, I think that's certainly a viable theory in terms of what happened. I mean, I guess I think part of the problem is that the Oscars are not really representative of the general public's tastes. They're representative of the tastes of a cloistered group of individuals who are in many ways very similar in terms of their demographic profile, the circles in which they run. So to me, I'm not trying to minimize the importance of race here. I'm saying that I think the deeper issue is just how the Academy is out of touch.
Well, I think that is that's the real issue, but people still kind of put that aside and everybody wants an Oscar. So, yeah, there's a reality. This is the Academy. So for me, I'm not surprised, to be honest. You know, I'm not surprised about what the result was. I'm not surprised someone was snubbed. Has nothing to do with the quality of the movie. It's about the composition of what actually exists there, and I think people are upset for not acknowledging that that's the case. So something like an Oscar So White is actually calling it out, calling it out perhaps in a very crass way, but the Oscars have always been so white. that's nothing new. So I think this has been a wonderful discussion, Matthew, about what race is. This article was first written for the Daily Dot.
Yes. Well, in this piece, I open by discussing how the concept of whiteness is not like other racial categorizations in that it primarily exists, at least in this country, as a tool for exclusion. And to illustrate this point, and I'm sort of overlapping into the second argument that I made in this piece, different groups have been considered white or non-white at different junctures throughout our history. You know, during World War I, Germans were often considered non-white. Jews and Italians and various Eastern Europeans were deemed ethnic white or somehow lesser white.
Less white, yes. Less than white. Maybe
in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. So the term white specifically is not like, for instance, African American, which refers primarily to Africans in this country of West African descent, whose ancestors were taken here as slaves. And it's a distinct history, it's a distinct ethnic group based around those historical roots. With the term white, you're talking about a term that literally exists to denote privilege, to say that if you fall within this group, you have certain privileges that those who aren't within this group or who are within lower in the hierarchy that exists within that group, you have privileges that they don't.
Right, and that's the very nature of what that term might be.
It's perfectly okay. I mean, like, I'm not arguing that people who are of European descent can't be proud of the different nationalities that they hail from, being German or Irish or English or any combination of various European ethnicities. That isn't the point. The point is that it is a difference between saying I'm proud of being, for instance, Greek and saying I'm proud of being white. When you say I'm proud of being white, you're speaking about a hierarchy and an artificial construct that has given those with the white designation unfair and unjust privileges.
And this unjust privileges, or this, how does that relate to the term white privilege, Matthew?
The term white privilege talks about basically the idea that if you benefit from the white label, you're going to receive certain advantages. For instance, not having to worry about not being as likely to get harassed by law enforcement, having more socioeconomic opportunities in terms of career advancement and, you know, things like that.
And I love what I love in your article where you talked about the historical significance of America being formed as a country around the same time that this term Caucasian was being formed. The whole concept of what race was all being formed and cooked in the books at the same time, in the DNA of our country.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's and not only was it were these racial theories occurring at this, concurrently with the foundation of our country, but our country incorporated racist theories into its constitution. I mean, the three-fifths rule was based entirely on the pseudoscience of racial difference. And I say pseudoscience because the more we learn about genetics, the more we realize that the extent that there is any genetic basis for race, it is so slight compared to the overwhelming commonalities that link every human being on a biological level. So race is, for all intents and purposes, a pseudoscience. And yet, for a very long time, it was perfectly legal to deny other human beings their full measure of human rights on the basis of this artificial construct.
And because it's artificial, and there is no real science behind it, and I've talked to a couple of people. Jane Elliott, most notably, she was a diversity trainer who's been on Oprah's show many times, and she's been called Oprah's most controversial guest. And she talked to me about the racism versus colorism. And she said this colorism is what is really infecting our culture. And as you just said, that's been put into the DNA.
And that term white pride feeds into it. It comes from the idea that I'm going to be proud of being white, when the term white doesn't refer to your specific background, the historical experiences of your ancestors before they came to this country. It refers to the privileges that you receive by not being a non-white.
So, Matthew, what's coming up for you? What articles can we be looking for, and you know, where can we find you?
I mean, I've been published recently on MSNBC, Daily Dot, Salon, The Good Men Project. You can write to me at my last name is spelled, as we alluded earlier, it's Hungarian, R-O-Z as in zebra, S as in snail, A. You can contact me at matt.rosa@gmail.com.
Fantastic. This is Matt Rosa, who is a phenomenal author and blogger, and we fully thank you, Matt, for coming on Bold today.
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
If you like what you've heard, you can join the conversation at GetBoldToday.com. Like us, tweet us, Instagram us, Google Plus us at GetBoldToday. Now, we are a pop culture wellness diversity podcast hosted by me, LeGron Green, and we bring you topics that are in the news that inspire us and provoke thought. Remember, shift happens right where you are. Be the change and get bold today.